Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. All right, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us now. It is Monday. Monday morning, that means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we got a lot more stuff to talk about as well. And including the movie reviews. Yes, it's Monday. Monday morning movie reviews will commence just now. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com join me every Monday morning to review all the new movies. And we also will talk about box office as well with Eric, who writes a piece that you can read at movies.com. Analyzing the box office of the week. So there you go. Let's begin the Monday morning movie reviews and welcome Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Oh, wait, there's Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. Welcome. All right. Before we get to the movie reviews, tell everybody now that the entire schedule has been released, Eric.
Yeah.
For the Chicago Film Critics Festival, which is May 20th through the 26th at the beautiful Music Box Theater, and I looked at the lineup. It's pretty great, man.
Thank you. We're quite proud of it.
I do want to say that for those people who regularly listen to this show, Eric does exclusive stuff for us live from many of the film festivals over the course of the year. You know, your Sundance, your Toronto, South by Southwest, all that stuff, and many of the movies that are going to be shown at the Music Box, Eric has reviewed here on the show. So I just want to let people know that that's how exclusive some of this stuff is.
Yes, and we only pick the good ones.
Yeah, yeah. Now there, and so tell everybody about some of that, and then Colin, I want to get into your the shorts programs that you programmed, and that you got two nights of those.
Yep,
and we want to get into that as well. And so, Eric, tell us about some of the stuff that's happening. And my friend Logan is going to be there closing night.
Yes, she's going to be there. In fact, I just booked her plane flight. As a matter of fact,
good. Okay.
So the Chicago Critics Film Festival that Colin and I are a big part of is going to be at the Music Box, as you mentioned. And we just announced our lineup. Tickets and passes are on sale for. We have 26 feature films throughout the week and two shorts programs that Colin is going to tell you all about in just a bit. And it's a pretty – we're so incredibly proud of this lineup. It's pretty amazing. Just the movies themselves are pretty impressive. And the amount of guests that are wanting to come to the festival this year is pretty amazing too. I mean, we've mentioned before we've got Craig Robinson – and director Chad Hartigan, who did This Is Martin Bonner, a really terrific film, is going to be there opening night with their movie Morris from America. On Saturday, we're at the 5 o'clock screening of a movie called Joshi. We're going to have Alex Ross Perry, who directed Queen of Earth. Mm-hmm. And Adam Pally will be there for the 5 o'clock showing. For the 7 o'clock showing of John Michael McDonough's War on Everyone, we just confirmed that Michael Pena is going to be there.
Nice.
Is going to talk about the film, so we're really excited about that. Sunday night, we're going to have Ira Sachs there for the premiere of his new movie, Little Men, with Greg Kinnear. Before that, at 6 o'clock, we're showing Taika Waititi's Hunt for the Wilder People, his follow-up to What We Do in the Shadows.
Right.
So that a lot of people are looking forward to that one. Monday night... and this is a hot ticket. I got to have to tell people about this. I talked about a movie at South by Southwest called American Fable.
Right.
This really beautiful film about an 11-year-old girl and the sort of this weird shenanigans that are going on around her farmhouse. It kind of plays like a Stephen King, one of his fables in a way. Mm-hmm. And it's an Illinois shot production, and a lot of people are coming in, including the young star Peyton Kennedy, the 11-year-old star of the film. And it's an Illinois production, so everyone is buying their tickets as we speak. So that's a hot ticket. And then we have a few during the week we're actually getting a chance to play doubles of. And this is actually one of them. We'll be playing this on the afternoon of closing night as well. Wednesday, we're going to have Ty West here within a Valley of Violence.
Yeah, that's the Western with Ethan Hawke.
That's right. That's Wednesday night. On Thursday, before our closing night film, Operator, that Logan will be here for, we're showing First Girl I Loved, and Dylan Galula, who plays the daughter of Jane Krakowski on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. She's the star of that movie, and she will be here for this. And we're still booking people. Mm-hmm. So this is just sort of what we have and we can talk about now. But like I said, tickets and passes are on sale right now. You do not want to miss this event. It's going to be quite a special week.
Now, you know, Eric, you did book a couple of you guys programmed a couple of horror movies that you saw while you were at different film festivals, and a couple of which I'm very interested in. Tell people about a couple of the horror movies that you booked.
Yeah, the midnight films that were playing on Friday and Saturday. There's a movie on Friday night called Trash Fire, which is the latest film from Richard Bates Jr., who did a movie called Excision a few years ago, a really creepy film. And this one stars Adrien Grenier and Angela Trimber. It's a comedy about a really dysfunctional relationship and a proof that you really can't go home again. That's all I'm going to say about
right.
it. But it's
okay.
really it's a really funny, really creepy film. That's going to be a really fun midnight film to watch. And then Saturday night we're playing another sort of comic horror tale called Another Evil that has been sort of best described as sort of how do I describe that? I forgot how we described it.
Yeah.
Is it sort of like Ghostbusters meets the Cable Guy, in a way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that stars Steve Zissou from HBO's Togetherness.
Right.
And that's a really funny movie as well.
All right. Cool. Well, it all sounds great. And again, individual tickets and passes are available. You can go to musicboxtheater.com. For schedule and more information, and as you heard, tons of celebrities coming in, really cool guests, and lots of interesting movies that you'll get your first crack at seeing, and it's all part of the Chicago Film Critics Festival. And now Colin chooses – let's once again remind everybody how many shorts you watched to choose from.
For about 70.
Jeez.
You know, that's stuff that's, you know, been submitted through, you know, Toronto Film Festival's Sundance and South by Southwest. Because it's a free submission process. I don't charge a submission fee to submit a short film.
Mm-hmm.
So, because we can only program two programs, so it's, you know. So this really is the best of the best of the best.
And how many movies are being shown total for both nights?
Well, we got between the two programs, we got 12 films, and then we got two short films that are playing before features.
Okay.
So yeah, where it's a little more spread out this year. We got one screening on Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m., and that's got some really great films we got a couple of guests for. You know, I don't know what people think when they think of short films. They think of those little small, little indie things that are, you know, you can watch on a small screen and, you know, you don't have to see in the theater. But I got a couple here that I can't wait to see on a big screen. You know, I got a movie called Voyagers, which is, you know, just you know, about, you know, the satellites that are orbiting our Earth right now. And you know, just that's one of those movies that I just can't wait to see on the big screen. Some of the footage in it is spectacular.
Yeah.
I got a movie called Bajo las Brasas, and which is about a girl who, you know, lives, you know, this far in the Sierra Mountains of Guanajuato, and she's, you know, leaving to, you know, pursue a life of education and everything, which is not very common in that area. And I got a cinematographer for that movie who's flying in from Mexico to be one of our guests.
Oh, that's cool.
For that.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And a comedy called Greener Grass, starring Jocelyn DeBoer and Dawn Luby. And they also wrote it. And Jocelyn's been at our festival from before. She was in Dead Snow 2.
Okay.
She's like the big sci-fi geek in Dead Snow 2.
Right, right. You guys also had Martin Starr last year.
Yeah.
And he's coming back, right? Eric, he's coming back.
Yeah, he'll be there for closing night.
That's great.
Yeah, so not quite a reunion because I don't think their paths will ever cross. It'll be on Saturday, and I think they're leaving before Thursday. So.
Yeah. It's like Lady Hawk.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but it's a really great, weird, comedy that they made, and so they're flying in to be guests for that, and that's going to be awesome. I got a movie written by, or starring and directed by Danny DeVito, that played Tribeca a couple weeks ago.
Cool.
Called Curmudgeons, which is going to be great. And it is great. I've seen it, of course.
Yeah.
Great. really sweet Danny DeVito movie.
It's what, really, what was the last feature that DeVito directed? Was it Smoochie?
It was Def Smoochie, yeah. And,
okay.
But he's been making a lot of short films lately, which I didn't know about until I saw this and looked on his IMDb page. He's got a bunch of shorts.
Yeah, because he's a damn good director. He's a really good director.
Yeah, and this is DeVito showing his sweet side. This
is cool.
His soft side, and it's really great. I mean, he made a movie with his kids, Jake DeVito, and his daughter's a star in it. And it's a really just kind of this one act play that it's adapted from, and it's really, really beautiful.
Okay. Hang on, guys, one second. We got to take a break, and we got the news here. But hold on, we'll get more details on the festival, and then we'll review all the new movies, and we'll find out more about the shorts that are going to be available for you to see. Again, this is the Chicago Film Critics Festival, and it's at the Music Box Theater May 20th through the 26th. Tickets are available. Go to musicboxtheater.com now. Check it all out. These guys put a lot of hard work into it, still working hard on it, and will probably be annihilated that entire week. They're just going to set up a couple of cots at the Music Box for them, for all those guys. All right, we'll take a quick break. We got the news coming up, and then we'll come back, talk more about the film festival, and getting to the new movies on the movie reviews here on a Monday morning. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Monday morning, that means my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time, and much more coming up. Phone number, as always, is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out at Twitter, at Nick D Show. The best way to stay connected, as I say, is the Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday to review the movies, and we have been speaking about the Chicago Film Critics Festival, which is happening at the Music Box Theater May 20th through the 26th. Eric is here, and Colin is here. And, Colin, you were just telling us about some of the shorts that you have programmed. You were telling us the last thing you were talking about was a movie that Danny DeVito directed called Curmudgeons. What are some of the other ones?
Yeah, I'll just mention, like, three more. The movie that rounds out the Saturday program is a movie called Peacock that I think is just extraordinary. It's one of those movies you watch and go, okay, this director is going to go places. It's just about this queer romance set in the 19th century about, you know, a very influential writer and how his story has been kind of kept secret all the centuries, and now it's finally being revealed. It's very dark comic, has kind of a Wes Anderson feel to it, but it's hard to describe. But when I watched it, I was like, I want to follow this director's work. It's really just beautifully done. I think it won the big director award at Sundance when it played. It's really terrific. It's called Peacock, and if any movie of this group might, you know, I can see any movie in this group getting nominated for an Academy Award next year, this one might be it.
Okay.
And then Monday we got another short program Monday afternoon at 5:30, and a couple ones worth mentioning in there. I got a movie called Killer that is it's a coming of age movie about death and sexual discovery. And when I watched it in my apartment, I had a very vocal reaction to it towards something that happens at the end. And I kind of can't wait to hear the audience's reaction to it, because I was kind of floored.
Okay.
That this movie went there. And then finally, it's going to end with a movie called Love Bite, which is a 36-minute documentary about an artist named Laurie Lipton who makes these insane, beautiful, really intricate drawings with pencil. Nothing more, just a pencil. And you look at this thing, and there's a picture of it on our website for the shorts program. It's the main picture, and you'll know what I mean. It's that she has just an extraordinary imagination and makes these amazingly intricate pencil drawings. Terry Gilliam is featured in this documentary, and if that tells you something about, you know, the kind of imagination that she has, that he would be involved in this.
Mm.
That's pretty cool to have a movie with him in it. And then we got a couple animated shorts playing before feature films that, you know, are pretty weird and interesting. And so, yeah, it's a pretty solid year for the short film.
Well, good for you. Congratulations, Colin. That sounds
Thank
great.
You.
That's really, really great. And congratulations, Eric, for you guys working, you know, like you and Brian and Peter and everybody working so hard to get this thing up and going.
Yeah, no, we're incredibly proud of it, and I mean, like Colin said with the short films, I can't wait for people to just see some of these films that we got, and just because I've talked about, like you said, I've talked about them on your show, and obviously we've all had these great reactions to seeing these movies, and there's even a couple films that I haven't even got a chance to see, recommended by the rest of the team.
Right.
So we're all going into this, with some of us just as excited as the moviegoers. So
yeah.
I hope that we really pack the house for some of these, because some of these are going to look fantastic on the big screen and going to be great to see with an audience.
Awesome. All right, everybody's got information here. Go to musicboxtheater.com. And the website for the film festival is?
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. Tickets are available. Passes are available. You can check out the schedule and read the synopsis of all the films and all that cool stuff. So make sure you check that out. Hey, speaking of the Music Box at midnight, am I going to see either of you guys this weekend?
Possibly.
Okay.
I'm really hoping to make it.
Because for those
most
of you,
likely Saturday, not Friday.
Okay. For those of you who don't, I'm going both nights. For those of you who don't know, Mad Max Fury Road is playing at midnight at the Music Box, but it's going to be shown in 35mm. And I can't wait.
I just watched it again tonight.
It's the best, man. I mean, please. So yeah, my weekend plans are like I will celebrate Mother's Day and Mad Max.
I will be there Tuesday.
You'll be there. Oh, you'll be for Risky Business.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Colin, are you coming to Risky Business?
Too.
You're coming.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, cool. We're starting to sell some tickets for it. I'm very excited, because for a while we had to have the date tentative.
Right.
Because we didn't know how deep into the playoffs the Hawks were going to go, and unfortunately they lost. But fortunately, now we can say that it is Tuesday.
Yeah.
It will be Tuesday night. It will be tomorrow night at the Movieco Theater in Rosemont, screening my second favorite film of all time, and I'm incredibly excited about it. And I don't know how long the talk is going to be afterwards, but it might go on a while. That's all I'm going to say. So, all right, I will be full disclosure, you guys. I only saw one movie this weekend.
I wonder which one.
Well, yeah, it's obvious which one I saw, but I just want to mention the reason why is because I spent almost the entire weekend watching Penny Dreadful. Which is a show that I was not, I didn't have Showtime. I'd heard about it, didn't watch it, and my ex-wife Heather kept texting me like incessantly, saying you have to watch this show. I cannot believe you are not watching this show. What the hell is wrong with you? So finally, I'm like, all right, fine. So I did the whole, I subscribed to Showtime thing, and for the 30-day, whatever, trial. I'll just probably end up keeping it. It doesn't matter. But so I give it, and then I started watching them Friday. And, oh, my God. Sometimes my ex-wife is absolutely right. I love this show. Colin, have you seen it?
No, I will at some point, and I just have not gotten
it's
around to it.
It's by far the best thing John Logan has ever had his name attached to. And it's phenomenal. Eric, you've seen it.
Oh, yeah. I'm caught up to the new season started tonight.
Yeah, I didn't see it last night. So I'm still a couple of episodes. I've still got, I think, two episodes left of season two. Oh, my.
It's an elegant and beautiful show.
Oh, my God. It's so good. And it's like, but it's so in my wheelhouse. You know what I mean? Like, it's all about the classic monsters, but with a completely different twist. When did, what happened? How, what, Josh Hartnett? How? How? What happened?
Well, I mean, when you're put in a cast like that, you tend to make, I think he's the lesser of the group.
Yeah, but he's really good.
But he gets better as the show goes on.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. And I mean, and what can you say about Eva Green? Oh my,
just watch.
Oh my God! I mean,
say a word. Just watch,
man. She is unbelievable, man, and she gets to do so many cool things in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. Really creepy, really detailed, gorgeous, gorgeous show that I was, again, way late to the party on this one. Way late. Maybe that's something we can talk about, because the last time that I caught up on something that I should have been watching from the beginning was Face Off. I'm not talking about the John Woo movie. I'm talking about the TV show that I didn't start watching until season 5. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with me? I should have been watching this show from the beginning because why wasn't I? Because it's like made for me. So anyway, I spent most of my weekend, you know, watching Eva Green.
So no, that's compared to what opened this weekend, I think that's probably a good idea.
So anyway, let's get into the first movie. Colin, well, tell us about Fireworks Wednesday, yet another movie that is at the Music Box.
Yeah, this is actually a 2006 film that is just now getting a U.S. release thanks to this brand new distribution company called Grasshopper Films. I tried finding out why it took so long for it to arrive here, but...
yeah, wow, 10 years. 10 years,
yeah,
long time.
I mean, you know, it just didn't happen, that's all. There's thousands of international films that just never make it to the States, even though they're really great. It just happens, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it helps now that the movie was written and directed by Asghar Farhadi, who, you know, is one of our very most acclaimed filmmakers. He made A Separation, The Path, last year's About Ellie. And this movie fits right in there with these films that are, you know, in tune with the plight of womanhood in Iran, and but are also very intricately woven, you know, personal stories of marital strife. And this is about a woman who is on the verge of marrying a guy that she absolutely loves, and she's hired out for a day to clean an apartment where she also has an appointment to get a makeover for her wedding. And she gets caught up in a drama that is slowly unfolding between the husband and wife who live in this apartment. The husband may or may not be cheating on the wife, and the wife is trying to find out. And meanwhile, a hairdresser who lives in the same building is on the verge of being evicted for running a business from her apartment, and she gets caught up in the drama as well. This woman just gets caught up in these little dramas, and she's kind of at the center of them, and she witnesses a lot and everything. And, you know, she's trying not to take sides and trying not to get involved, but she just is. And this is, like I said, this is right in the same, you know, vein as The Separation and The Past and About Ellie. This guy really knows how to write about conflict and do so in a really realistic way, and is constantly shifting the audience's point of view, where you're on one side with one character and then later you're on the other side with the other character, and you're not quite sure who's right or wrong anymore. And you know, the movie just kind of keeps you guessing, and for a movie that's not quite, you know, not, you wouldn't classify as a mystery. The title Fireworks Wednesday refers to this kind of celebration that happens, you know, on this day every year in Iran. And, you know, so the fireworks has double meaning there. And this is a really terrific movie that I'm really glad found its way to the States. And it's shot on film, so, you know, it's made 10 years ago, so that explains why Music Box has a 35-millimeter print that they're showing. it's really worth checking out. This guy makes really, I think, great movies. I look forward to seeing his stuff all the time. And I'm hoping, I mean, there's a couple other movies on his, you know, resume between this and The Separation that I'm not sure have received U.S. distribution, but I hope so. I definitely want to see them. This is Fireworks Wednesday. It's at the Music Box. Definitely check it out.
Okay. Great. Fireworks Wednesday now playing at the Music Box and also being shown in 35. So they have to warm the projector up for the weekend.
Yep.
For when the projector explodes from sheer excitement. Okay. Eric, Colin, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll take a quick break. We come back. We got more movies to review. We'll talk about the weekend box office as well. We do it every Monday on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. All right. We'll do it. We'll take a break and come back after this. Monday Morning Movie Reviews continue right here on 720 WGN. Nick Giglio here, Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and more. Join me every Monday morning to review the new movies, and we welcome them back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, Colin, again, why don't you tell us about Ratchet and Clank?
All right.
Don't sound so enthused.
Well... This is an animated film based on a video game, okay?
Ah.
That's where the enthusiasm is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I'm told, this movie should have been made 10 years ago. So it's like a real, it's like an outdated animated film based on a video game.
Okay.
Not that.
So now, wait, this is a game that now nobody plays.
Right. Ah. Or it's just not in vogue as it once was.
Okay.
I don't know anything about video games any more than you do.
So, okay. Yeah. All right.
So this is about a mechanic, like a little Sox-like character who gets caught up in a plot involving the sinister guy named Chairman Drek and his ability to destroy whole planets. And he, like I said, he's a mechanic and he, you know, like builds a lot of things. And Clank is this robot character who two of them are at first sort of ostracized from being in this elite superhero squad called the Galactic Rangers. But end up joining them later on in their plan to get rid of this big weapon. One of the Galactic Rangers is kind of big, hulky doofus that should have been voiced by Patrick Warburton, but is not. He's kind of gone rogue and starts getting corrupted by the villain. And yeah, so this is a movie that, you know, tonally, it really wants to be the Lego movie. You know, it's got gag every 5 seconds, and not a lot of it sticks. Not as well as the Lego movie. It's got some laughs. I mean, it's got moments where I chuckled. It's got a fun gag involving the Wilhelm scream that, you know, I thought was kind of clever.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty obscure go-to reference, but like all the critics in the front row were laughing at. The rest of the audience was like, huh?
Yeah.
It's really, it just kind of tries a little too hard to be like the Lego movie. And you can see them really struggling to try and replicate that feeling. The voice work isn't very inspired. A lot of the voice work in the film is done by the people who do the voice work in the video game. So I leaned to the critic next to me. I was like, should I feel stupid for not knowing these names that I'm seeing here? And that's what I was told. So, you know, aside from like Sylvester Stallone and maybe a couple other people.
I see. I'm looking at the list here. It's Giamatti.
Yeah, Giamatti.
John Goodman, Rosario Dawson. Those are some of the.
That's about it.
Yeah.
And those are like kind of minor characters. Mm. So, I mean, it's not a total disaster. It's not the worst, you know, animated film you're going to sit through. That would be Norm of the North, which is god awful. It's certainly not as bad as that. But it's also not as good as, you know, Zootopia or even The Jungle Book, if you're just talking about movies to take your kids to. So this is a movie that was kind of just past the it's just kind of late getting here, and it feels late getting here. And, you know, it's nothing. It's not that fresh story wise. We kind of know exactly what the arc is going to be and what the main character's journey is going to be from the first 2 minutes. It's got some clever gags here and there, but mostly you can just skip this one.
Okay. All right. I had never, I mean, is this, Eric, do you know anything about, is this like a PlayStation? Is it Xbox? What is this?
I don't know. Honestly, I mean, I used to know more about games than I do now.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a friend of mine, you know, like I heard about the movie, and then a friend of mine said, oh, I love that game. I'm like, what? I didn't even know it was a game, Frank.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we all know the kind of the history of the – has there ever been a good movie based on a video game? I'm weird. I like Silent Hill. And I know I'm like the only person
yeah.
who likes that movie, but I actually really like Silent Hill because it's so crazy and it makes absolutely no sense. And I just thought it was really beautifully directed. But what else? I mean, Mortal Kombat? What?
No.
Get down here! That's the only thing that I remember.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Tron doesn't count.
No, well, Tron was a movie, then a video game, right? Were they both,
right.
Or almost it was simultaneous, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
I like the movies. There have been movies, good movies based on fake video games.
Yep.
Last Starfighter,
yeah.
Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, okay. All right, Colin,
like
what were you going to say?
No, I just said I like The Last Starfighter, even though it's not quite a video game movie.
No, it's not.
I don't know. I used to have, I had one answer for this, but I don't. I like to think that Meek's Cutoff is based on Oregon Trail, but I don't think it is officially. But I always think about Oregon Trail when I watch it.
I would love the fact that that director would make a movie based on a video game. That's like she's like the last director on the planet, like literally the last director on the planet who would make a movie about a video game.
Right. A lot of things happen in that movie that happen on Oregon Trail.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, Ratchet and Clank. No.
Not really.
All right. All right, guys, hang on, okay? We got a break for the news. We'll break. We got the news, and after the news, we'll talk more. Got new movies to talk about and box office as well. Morning. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. Here till 5. And, yeah. And we're reviewing the new movies right here on WGN. It is movies, and it's Monday. That means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And I think we're going to jump into the topic that I mentioned a little bit earlier about getting to things too late, like getting you know, starting to watch something or getting too late to something. Like, for instance, what I'm talking about now, season 3 of Penny Dreadful debuted last night. And, you know, the show's been on now since, like, 2014, so it's been on for, this is the third year, obviously, and I have not watched it. And then, you know, my ex-wife kept insisting that I watch it via texts, like very insistent, all caps, exclamation point texts. So finally I said, all right, fine, I'll watch it. And I got the subscription thing to Showtime, and I spent most of the weekend just watching Penny Dreadful, and it's an extraordinary show. So what were we late to the party on? That's what we're going to be talking about, whether it be a movie, whether it be a TV show, book, music. What were you late to the party? Everybody loved it for a really long time, and then you finally got it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But we're talking about movies right now. Eric Childress and Colin Suter. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. Well, all right, Eric.
Yeah.
You're going to fly solo on this next one.
Okay.
Tell us about The Meddler.
Okay. Well, The Meddler stars Susan Sarandon as a sort of a recently widowed New Jersey woman whose daughter, played by Rose Byrne, lives in Los Angeles. She writes, she's a writer on like a sitcom. And she's constantly calling her and bugging her and whatnot, giving her advice and just wanting to talk to her. But her
You mean she's meddling?
Yeah, she's meddling.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it would have been a good title for the movie. her daughter is, she's exasperated at work. She's exasperated from her own breakup. But she's mostly exasperated with her mother just constantly poking around in her business. So what does mom do? Well, she moves to Los Angeles to be closer to her daughter, and this doesn't exactly sit well in their relationship. Mom, of course, means very well, but her daughter is just, you know, kind of a pill and just, like I said, just sort of generally stressed out about everything and kind of wants her mom to just back off a little bit. So mom begins focusing her energy around town. She begins focusing on a friend of her daughter who's getting married and doesn't have the money for it. And thankfully, she's been left quite a sum of money by her husband, so she just pays for the wedding. And she goes to the Apple store to buy her, you know, her first big iPhone, and ends up helping to, like, fund the college career of the one of the Apple store kids. Whether or not she's going to sort of reconcile her daughter and find happiness and all that kind of stuff. So this film was written and directed by Lorene Scafaria, is her name, and her last movie was Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Which was terrific.
A criminally underrated, very underseen film.
I agree.
If you haven't seen that film, I highly recommend you checking that one out.
I agree. And Eric, I just want to mention, it is a terrific movie. Steve Carell and a very unlikely romantic interest for him, played by Keira Knightley.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the best things she's ever done. I really do.
I agree.
I think it's one of the best performances ever.
And yeah. I recommend you checking that one out because I think it's actually much better than this film. If the film sounds like it has kind of a sitcom-y type premise to it, it's something that the movie can never really escape from. The characters are seemingly very thinly drawn very early on, and it's something that I could not get away from no matter how much they tried to sort of open up the characters and give them a few more dimensions. Like I said, the daughter, Rose Byrne, is just kind of very one-note, and just you kind of feel bad for Susan Sarandon's character anytime she's around her, even though you can kind of understand Rose Byrne's point of view of just being meddled in her life all this time.
Yeah.
The subplots involving all the people that she begins helping in Los Angeles really feel like sort of B and C subplots from a sitcom that you would see. The only one that kind of works is a relationship that she begins to develop with the great J.K. Simmons, who plays a cop, a retired cop in the film, who does security at the studio where her daughter does the sitcom. And his relationship with her scenes together with Susan Sarandon form the kind of movie that you wish you were seeing all along.
Yeah.
And fortunately, it's only about a third of the entire movie, and most of it is in the back half of the film. And if it would have spent a little bit more time just, you know, set up the relationship between the mother and daughter and then shifted focus over to this relationship, I think we would have had a much more fulfilling, much sweeter film. But ultimately, it was a film that I saw it in Toronto last year, and it really quickly just kind of escaped my brain, with the exception of the scenes between her and Simmons. Mm. So, you know, I know a lot of people are really sort of praising this thing, and I don't know, maybe it was just sort of a package of a lot of sitcom-y type films that I had seen in Toronto at the time, and I can't recommend it.
Okay. She also, I just want to mention, she also wrote Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, which is another good film.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to mention, I'm looking at this cast list, Eric. My God, Cecily Strong, Lucy Punch, Casey Wilson, and Amy Landecker. Like, incredibly funny and talented women.
Yeah, Cecily Strong plays the woman who's getting married who can't afford it.
Mm.
So all very small roles. Amy Landecker plays Rose Byrne's therapist that Sarandon goes to see to try to get some information out of her about her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I forget.
Jason Ritter is in it. Michael McKean.
Jason Ritter plays Rose Byrne's ex in the film that she broke up with.
But it's a good cast. Wow.
It's a good cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Speaking of Amy Landecker, A Serious Man was on cable like Thursday or...
That's a good scene.
You know what, man? I adore that movie, and that's like considered a complete bomb, right, for the Coens?
It didn't do very well, no. But I mean, it got nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, that's right, it did. That was the first year they started nominating 43 movies.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's my second favorite. It's my I've gone on record now. It's my second favorite Coen Brothers movie of all time.
Hmm.
Right, it's Barton Fink and then that one, because they're very, very similar, like in tone and style.
Yeah,
they are very similar and like really creepy. And and we were talking about, we didn't mention this one last week. We were talking about ambiguous endings.
That's Colin's favorite ambiguous ending.
And Colin, what were you going to say? You didn't like the ending, Colin?
Not really, but it didn't destroy didn't destroy the movie for me. It was
right.
Kind of one of those Coen brother endings where it's like, okay, they didn't know what to do, and now we're just all supposed to go home and think about how profound it is when it really isn't.
See, that's what I thought about. That's what I thought about No Country for Old Men. Whereas, like Serious Man, that really, I thought the ending was great. Like, it really worked on me. Like, it kind of blew me away. But the ending of No Country for Old Men, I was like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, so they went through a whole period of that. I think it was like the last 20 minutes. Like, let's just make this. We'll just do all this other stuff that we were that got left on the cutting room floor, and we'll just like paste it all together for the last 20 minutes.
That's what I. That's exactly how I felt about Hail Caesar.
For the Coen Brothers. We can.
That's
do that. Yeah.
That's exactly how I felt about Hail Caesar. But I do want to mention Barton Fink has my favorite Coen Brothers ending of all time. With one of the funniest to this day, one of the funniest sight gags ever, you guys remember the last shot of Barton Fink, right?
Yes.
He's sitting on the beach watching the girl, the image of which he's been staring at in the hotel room while he's writing on a postcard, and in comes a seagull and flies and hits the top of the frame and falls.
Yep.
One of the greatest sight gags ever. And then for me, there's like this weird connection between that. We talked about this before, between that and Big Lebowski, where I always picture, because they're on the, when they spread Donnie's ashes in Lebowski,
mm-hmm.
they're on like a peak overlooking that exact location that they used in Barton Fink and they used in Hail Caesar. And But I always picture the seagull not only hitting the top of the postcard frame and falling as a great sight gag, but now there's a connection between I think the seagull got hit with Donnie's ashes and and falls. There's some sort of weird
later. Yeah.
I don't care. In my brain that's what happens. So all right. Okay, well, the meddler, not recommended. Okay, Eric, hang on. Colin, hang on. Mm-hmm. All right, when we come back, we have a fantastic Gary Marshall ensemble comedy to tell you about. And then this little movie called Kiana with these two guys named Key and Peel, I think, are their names. All right, take a quick break. We got a break here, and we come back with more movie reviews on WGN. Yeah, man. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. On a Monday morning. Monday morning movie reviews continue. We'll talk box office with Eric Childress as well. Colin Suter is with us as well. And let's get back to the reviews. And Colin, you're up again.
Yep.
Explain Mother's Day.
Can you ever really explain?
Well, let me just say this, Colin. I really was going to try and see this one, but then I saw that you saw it, and I went, oh, all right.
Yeah, exactly. I do that too. We all do that.
Yeah. We're going to have it covered as long as it's covered on the show. You know what I mean? As long as we get it covered on the show, I'm good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Yeah.
Right.
Somebody's got to take the bullet. Oh, yeah. That one already did? Good. Mm-hmm. Yes, the latest from Gary Marshall, and it follows the same template as his last two films, Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve. It's an ensemble piece, like you said. Following many characters, all having their different storylines, all tied together via this kind of large family. You got Julia Roberts as a home shopping network host who's not married, and nor does she have kids. We figure out at the beginning of the film. Kate Hudson is a woman who is secretly married to Asif Manvi, so her racist parents don't find out. Her sister is played by Sarah Chalk. She's a lesbian who is also living in secret. So her racist homophobic parents don't find out. Of course, the parents, when they show up, you know, they learn all of this at once. Jason Sudeikis plays a single dad whose wife died in combat. And Jennifer Aniston has probably the biggest storyline. And she's a single mom with two boys who has to deal with the fact that her ex-husband, played by Timothy Olyphant, now has a new wife who's only in her 20s.
How many how many movies has Jason Sudeikis now made with Jennifer Aniston?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't keeping track.
I mean, it's got to be like four, right?
Every Jennifer Aniston movie I've seen in the last several years, I've kind of forgotten about. But
she's,
it's really funny.
Wait, other than We're the Millers, what are the two ones?
The Two Horrible Bosses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's so good in the first Horrible Bosses. It's like I think it's the greatest Jennifer Aniston performance of all. No, The Good Girl is, but I just like that the fourth movie that they've made together. Do they have scenes together, Colin?
Oh yeah, lots.
Oh okay.
Yeah. It's the big relationship in the film.
Okay.
There's probably another storyline that I'm forgetting, but I don't care. And there's nearly no reason to care about this movie either. I mean, it is, but this might be the most offensive of the three. It is just sort of crazily racist and kind of sexist in some parts, to the point where I was getting pretty uncomfortable, especially sitting next to Chaz Ebert during the film.
Oh,
and
God.
there's a reoccurring character who suffers a lot in the film that just like I could kind of feel her anger sitting next to me. And I totally get that. But it was just like, there are so many bad sitcom moments in the film. So many times when it just is just cloying. And I know this should come as a surprise, Gary Marshall's most recent work, but this is like cranked up to 11. And I don't know how many. This has got to be a record in this movie for the number of like non-actors coming into the frame, saying a line of dialogue, and then walking out of frame. You know, it's like how many SAG cards were given out to make this film. But, like, I was like, who the heck is this character? Wait, what? Who is this? And, you know, you got, like, little kids coming in at the end during a big wedding scene doing these, like, acrobatics. Like, whose kids are these? Wait, we don't know who these characters are. And then I look at, you look in the credits on the IMDb page, and you see all the little kids' last names are Marshall.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. Right. It's that kind of movie. And there's even, of course, it's a Gary Marshall movie, so Hector Elizondo is in it, and there's a scene between him and Julia Roberts when they do a Pretty Woman joke that makes no sense at all for these two characters to say or to make. They just threw it in there because, hey, let's make a Pretty Woman joke here for
right.
no reason.
Right.
It's that kind of movie. Yeah, this is a pretty awful film that should be avoided at all costs.
And we will talk about its box office success a little bit later on. hey, Colin, I noticed that that speaking of jokes within the world of the movie that make no sense, like this, you know, this joke about Pretty Woman because they were both in it. And Gary Marshall directed it. Speaking of a movie full of those kind of jokes, I noticed on your Facebook page that you finally watched Deadpool.
No.
Ooh, okay.
I hate to tell you this, but I think you got me confused with somebody else.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought that was you. And I was gonna. Nope. I was gonna ask did you see Deadpool?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right. Okay. Because that's Deadpool is 90 minutes of that.
Oh, great.
And I know, Eric,
intentional, though.
I know. Nick.
I mean, that's the comic. That's the completely fourth wall intentional.
I know, but I couldn't.
It's not like an easy A where they have a flashback to a joke that didn't exist.
Okay.
Right. Something like right. fall back.
I couldn't get past it the entire time I was watching Deadpool. I'm like, what the hell is going on? What world is this? It was just it made me nuts. Made me nuts. All right, so Mother's Day is crap.
Yeah.
All right. Is this going to be more than a trilogy? Is Gary Marshall now?
God, I hope not.
Is he doing Arbor Day next? What's going on?
Flag Day, I think.
Flag Day is going to be the next one. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right, guys, hang on. We've got this little movie about a cat to talk about, and it's called Keanu. We'll tell you about that after we take a break here. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's get back to the movie reviews. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WG, and Eric Childress, Colin Suter, join me. And now we got to get to the big movie, although it didn't make a ton of money over the weekend, and we'll talk about that. This is the one that I've probably been waiting for since I first heard about it, like a year ago. And Eric, you reviewed it already because you saw it. What film festival? South by Southwest.
South by Southwest.
South by Southwest. Okay. Key and Peele, two of the funniest guys, if not the two funniest men that are currently existing on the planet. This is their first sort of film as Key and Peele, and it's called Keanu. So, Eric, tell everybody about Keanu.
Okay. This one, it stars Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, suffering from a really bad breakup. And he feels like he's at the end of his rope. And his best friend and cousin, played by Key, does his best to cheer him up. But the only thing that really sort of brings him back is the appearance of this little kitty cat that shows up at his doorstep. And it really sort of brings a new vitality to his life. He's happy again. He's just full of energy and full of great spirits. Little does he know that the cat actually belongs to a drug kingpin operation in the area, and which has just recently escaped from. And when the cat goes missing and back into the hands of these people once again, the two of them team up to get back the cat and have to go sort of pseudo undercover to act like drug dealers themselves. To do their best to infiltrate the drug dealers and get the cat back. So that's the basic setup of the plot. And as you mentioned, that Key and Peele are pretty much sketch comedy geniuses. I think for the last few years, their show has really been at the top of really sort of ingenious sketch comedy. No one's really been doing it much better than them. Certainly not Saturday Night Live. And so to see them, on the screen together doing a project like this, you would hope that would translate. And to me, it translates very early on. I think the early scenes in the film, really before the main crux of the plot kick in, I think the first 15, 20 minutes are really quite funny. Then when it starts to get into the stuff about the drug dealers and whatnot, I began to slowly, my laughter began to slowly reduce because it seemed to me like they were getting into this sort of the sketch comedy trap and finding a couple of really good jokes and just kind of running the same shtick into the ground over and over and over again. And as I mentioned when I saw it in Austin, that by like the 15th time they had to try, you know, to act tough, it was, you know, it was just, you might as well just been replaying the scene where Pryor and Wilder, you know, going to the prison and stir crazy, you know, and just played that over my head over and over again. And by like the 10th George Michael tribute joke in the film, I was just like, come on, guys, you're better than this. The only really, really clever joke that I think works in the main aspect of this plot is this really inspired punchline to a cameo that happens about halfway through the movie. That, I think, worked really well, even though I think then it kind of gets taken to a place that I think isn't quite as funny. So ultimately, I found this movie to be actually quite a failure for Key and Peele.
Okay. All right. Colin.
I like the movie a little bit more. And you want to talk about being late to the party? This is the my
oh, okay.
pick for being late to the party. Because I got Hulu finally like a month or two ago, and I'm just now starting on Key and Peele, so I'm like still halfway through the first season.
Oh man.
I just saw the gangster rap video they did called "I Got Shot in the
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had tears in my eyes the night before I saw this movie. I never quite had tears in my eyes when watching this film, but I did laugh quite a bit, at least in the first half or first 45, 60 minutes before the movie kind of just peters out a little bit. That, you know, just kind of left me slightly disappointed. But I think there's just enough good laughs in the first half that, and I especially just like the two of them. I like their chemistry, characters, you know, how just I like being with these two characters that they created. And of course it helps that I'm a cat person and the kitten looks like my cat. So, you know, there's a little, you know, I kind of have a soft spot for this film in that regard. So I'm kind of with Eric that it's a disappointment. It doesn't live up to, you know, the best stuff of their TV show. And I think they're more capable of writing a better script than this, you know, the kind of movie that doesn't, you know, run out of steam as quickly as this one does, or not as quickly, but, you know, the way this one does. But I kind of have a soft spot for it too, just based on the strength of the first 45, 60 minutes. So I'm kind of giving it a mild recommendation. If there was such a thing as a 2¾ star review, that's what this might be. So yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, I love it. I loved it. I laughed my ass off from the beginning to the end. I can see why, you know, people are saying that it does peter out towards the end. It's not as inspired. The last, like, 20 minutes of the film is not as inspired as the first, like, hour and 10. But it still goes to this, it goes into that area that most of the Key and Peele sketches do. A lot of the best Key and Peele sketches go off in a different direction, completely different direction that you don't see coming. I don't know if Colin, I think you're not there yet. You're clearly not there yet because this was, I believe it was last season. They did a Family Matters sketch where the Reginald Van Johnson comes in and starts screaming at the head writer about how Urkel is basically taking over the show. And it's hysterical. And then it just goes weird. It just goes into this zone that's just very strange. And I think a lot of this movie does that. They clearly, you know, they like these two guys are geeks in real life and in the movie. And they clearly like John Woo movies. And they've done that a million times on their sketches. They've made many John Woo type mini movies. And this is another one. And there are sections of the movie that are clearly like, we love John Woo. We want doves flying around. We want to shoot in slow motion. And we can do that. And I still think it's funny. They could have done 50 more George Michael jokes, and I would have laughed at every one of them. I would have laughed at every one of them. The scene where he's in the family van with the other guys teaching them how street George Michael is, because Ridgely has never been seen since. I'm telling you, I was crying. And and that whole sequence that you were talking about, Eric, with the celebrity cameo.
Yeah.
The reveal
is inspired.
Oh my God, man. I did not see that coming at all, because the celebrity is in the scene for a little bit and you're like, "Oh, that's cool. This person's in it. That's neat that she's in it." And mm-hmm. then when the reveal happens, the scene just goes into another, you know what I mean? It just takes off into another stratosphere. And then what the behavior that continues on the part of this woman, it makes it all the more funny. So, all right, let me just say this. I love these guys, and I think they're hilarious. There are so many, I think, huge laughs in this movie from beginning to end. There were times that I have not laughed this hard in a movie in a really long time, like cry laughing. I love the Liam Neeson's reference. Did you guys notice the name of the movie? That Liam, because at the beginning of the movie, Keegan's trying to, cheer up Jordan. They go to a movie.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the movie.
Okay, they go to the.
I can't remember either.
It's on the marquee when they're driving past. It's on the marquee, and it's like it's Liam Neeson's, and the name of the movie is Substitute Teacher, which.
Oh right, okay, yeah.
Which was just like this little treat, you know what I mean? For mm-hmm. It is just on the marquee, and they said Liam Neeson's. They said it once, and then that was it. So they did they did a little bit of the valet guys in there. The kitten is adorable, and I, like you, Colin, am a cat person. And every time they showed the cat's on the front of the car, on the hood of the car when they're going 90, laughed my ass off. The cat's got the do-rag on and the chain, laughed my ass off. I don't care. The fantasy sequence where at one point Keegan is inside the Faith video and then goes to the Matrix, loved it. The supporting cast is very funny. I love Tiffany Haddish. I think she's really funny in this. Method Man is very funny. I think the two guys, Trunk and Bud, are hilarious. Bud is Jason Mitchell. He played Eazy-E in Straight Outta Compton. He's got some very funny moments in this movie. And this Darnell Britt Gibson, who was in, as a kid, he was on The Wire. But he's got what I think is one of the funniest lines in the entire movie. It's a throwaway line. And it involves Will Forte being in the trunk of a car. Do you guys remember this throwaway line that happens?
No.
Okay, if you remember very quickly, Trunk, at one point, they tell each person to stand in a circle and tell two secrets about themselves or two things about themselves, because Keegan's character is like a corporate trainer. So he tries to apply that to gangsta world. And so so Trunk tells his story about how he got his nickname because he locked his keys in the trunk with a dead body. And that's why he got the name Trunk, because he locked his keys in the trunk with a dead body. And then, like, later in the movie, very late in the film, there's a part where Will Forte is in the trunk of a car. And, Key and Peele close the trunk, and then out of the background, you hear the character go, "Don't forget your keys." I almost fell out of my chair. So I laughed beginning to end. I loved it. I think it's the funniest movie I've seen in a really, really long time. Will Forte is very funny in it. Louis Guzman shows up because he's Louis Guzman. It gets a little bit, it gets a little bit silly towards the end. But by that point I had laughed so much, and so hard throughout the entire film. And Eric, I believe it's absolutely on purpose. That first of all, they reference Richard Pryor at one point in the movie. And then when they're walking down the hallway, as they're going deeper and deeper, there's just it's completely obvious that that homage is to Stir Crazy.
Right.
There's no question about it. I don't know. I thought it was great. And so I don't know. It just made me laugh. I'm going to see it again. I laughed my ass off. And again, I love these guys. I love cats, and I love George Michael. So this was like, come on.
You love Keanu.
And I love Keanu. And I love Keanu Reeves. So
right.
So, this was like tailor-made. It was like, you should have called this movie For Nick.
Yeah.
So anyway, I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. So I'm highly recommending it. All right, next week we got Civil War. Yes, the Captain America movie.
Pretty much.
All right. And maybe I will see you guys. I'll see both of you. Colin, we're going to let you go. So we'll come back. Eric and I are going to talk box office. Colin, I'll see you Tuesday night at Risky Business.
Sounds good.
And then hopefully in the weekend we'll watch Mad Max for, the second time?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Thank you, Colin. We'll talk to you next week. Eric, hang on. All right, we'll take a break. We got weather, we got traffic, and then after I give you the weather and traffic right here, we will talk box office right here on 720 WGN. Here's your weather. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio. Welcome back. Monday morning, that means my dad will call in and tell a jokey time. We're also going to talk about things that you were late to the party with. I just started watching Penny Dreadful because I'm an idiot, and I should have been watching it for 3 years now. And it's great. And so we're going to talk about things that you were late to the party with. But we want to wrap up the movie talk here. We reviewed all the new movies, and now we're going to talk about the box office. Eric writes a piece about the box office every week, and you can read it at movies.com. Tell everybody where they can see you on the TVs.
Yes, on Business First AM on WYCC every Thursday morning at 5 a.m. So set your DVRs for that.
Right, and or just listen to my show. When my show ends, turn it on.
That's right.
that seems to be the most...
It's that simple.
It's that simple. All right, well, let's talk about it. The Jungle Book, $42.4 million. That was that the area that you thought it would be?
I was thinking mid-30s.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, this was a pretty... I mean, last week it made $60 million. Yeah. This week it makes $42 million. And granted, it didn't exactly have competition this week. And I really hope that the people who took their kids to see Ratchet and Clank had already seen The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Because that would just be cruel.
No, it would be. It would be wrong. My guess is they did. Judging by the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need something new. We can not go see it in a second. But clearly, I mean, I don't know, there's repeat business, and this film is going to pass $300 million. It's getting close to the pace of what Alice in Wonderland did some years ago. And if it stays on that pace, it's going to pass Batman versus Superman.
Wow, that's amazing. Boy, that Batman versus Superman. Still in the top 10, though.
Yeah, but the problems are starting.
Yeah.
The problems are starting behind the scenes. The DC universe is starting to implode a little bit.
Yeah. I've been reading a little bit about it. Mm-hmm. But now there's a massive drop off between number 1 and number 2 on the list this week, cuz you go from $42 million for The Jungle Book to $9 million for The Huntsman.
Yeah, Huntsman is woof.
Yeah.
I don't know if you call it a full bomb. I don't know if it's going to be bomb disappointment or just however you want to classify it, but it's a very good possibility that it's not going to do half the money that the original film did worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, it's one of these sequels that nobody asked for.
No.
There's been a few of those this year, starting with the Zoolander movie. Like, who the hell wanted Zoolander 2?
Right.
Nobody wanted Zoolander 2.
Nope.
I don't remember asking for it.
Nope.
Number 3, Keanu at $9.3 million. That's about what I expected. I expected, because I don't think, you know, Key and Peele, they're popular, but they're sort of popular because it's a basic cable show.
Mm-hmm.
They're popular with people who have computers and like to go to the YouTubes and stuff like that. It's not crossover popularity. I didn't expect this thing to make more than like $12 million at the most.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking, too. I mean, it was one of those sort of anomaly movies where because it was so well advertised and because there was nothing else opening this weekend, that I thought that, you know, maybe it might pull in, you know, an African-American audience and whatnot. So I thought it could possibly reach sort of the high teens, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little lower than I was expecting, but I'm not entirely surprised because of what you just said.
Yeah. That's what, I mean, you know, and obviously they did a great, I mean, they were blanketed, man. Key and Peele.
I mean, you can't really blame Warner Brothers on this one.
No.
They were doing their job, and
absolutely,
the advertising was certainly out there.
They advertised it. Key and Peele were everywhere. They were going to animal shelters and stuff. They were doing interviews with cats. I mean,
mm-hmm,
they did, because cats are popular on the internet again.
Yeah.
So they did everything they could to promote it. It's just that I'm not surprised. You know, I would have liked to have seen more people get turned on to Key and Peele by seeing this movie, because they're so great. But, you know, I wasn't really surprised by that it only did 9.3.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the next one, Mother's Day, $8.3 million. Now, this has got to be the lowest of the Gary Marshall holiday openings.
Yeah, it's the lowest of the holiday openings. I mean, Valentine's Day was huge. That opened like $56 million.
Right.
On Valentine's Day weekend, and did over $100 million. New Year's Eve, not as much. Did like started with 13, made like 54. The difference between this one and those movies, though, is that this one only cost $25 million, then was eventually picked up by Open Road, so it cost half of what the other movies did.
Okay.
And the international take, I think just because of the casts, were relatively decent for the first two movies. So if they can match, you know, 107, I think, for Valentine's Day, like 87 for New Year's Eve, if they can do that much overseas, then this movie will actually make a profit. It's just not gonna, the numbers in the U.S. are just not going to look very good.
Right. So, but, you know, it could end up making a profit, which means Arbor Day is next.
Right, exactly.
Okay. And then finally, let's go to number seven here, Ratchet and Clank, which was the other kids movie that opened this weekend, animated movie, which we talked about earlier. $4.8 million, that's not good at all.
No, and no surprise there. And look what was number six, Zootopia.
Yeah, Zootopia, man, oh man.
Still killing it, over $900 million worldwide. Jungle Book's almost at $700 million.
Wow.
Man, what a year for Disney.
Unbelievable. Okay, and obviously it's all going to be about Captain America next week. What do you think it's going to make on opening weekend?
I actually think it's going to do more than the Avengers.
Wow, okay.
I have a hunch it's going to do somewhere in between the Avengers and Jurassic World.
Which would
put it at
about how much?
About 215.
215. That's what you're guessing.
Guess.
Okay, we'll see what happens next week. All right, Eric, thanks, man. I'll see you Tuesday night at Risky.
Sounds good.
Take care. Eric Childress, everybody. You can read his box office stuff at movies.com, and you can listen to Colin and Eric and myself review all the movies every Monday. We got a break here for the news. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.